This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Inferno by Sherilyn Kenny. Read by Holter Gray. Prologue. New Orleans, in the far distant future. Silhouetted by the setting sun and completely rusted out on the inside from his hatred of every living thing, Nick stood on the top of what remained of the old Jack's Brewery building, watching his once beloved city burn to the ground. His demon's eyes flickered with hunger and self-pride, mirroring the fires that burned all around him. No longer possessing even a shred of humanity, he glanced at his hand, where he gripped a bloodied sword. From beneath his golden armor, his true demon skin showed its swirling black and red pattern. Lifting his chin, he stood tall and defiant, with his black wings spread wide. Fierce and terrifying to anything that neared him, he had finally come into his own. And the massacre below was what fed him deep in his blackened soul. Utter destruction and absolute human misery. There was no headier concoction, no better sight. He couldn't be happier as he surveyed the aftermath of his war against the humans and gods. Shattered helicopter pieces lay scattered on the asphalt and across the whole of Jackson Square. But those weren't the only remains lining the street. The grotesque sight would turn his stomach had he possessed any feeling whatsoever. However, his tender emotions, like the once great city and the humans who'd called it home, were gone. Nothing except hatred and rage ruled him now. As he watched, detached from it all, his demonic army feasted on the remains of the poor creatures who'd attempted to fight, or those dumb enough to try and flee. Soon, there would be no one left to cry. He laughed in triumph. He had won this war, and he reigned supreme. There was no one left to fight him now. Suddenly, the wind carried something odd to his ears. He heard human voices. Not shrieking in fear or begging for mercy like the others, these were inside the cathedral. They were the voices of warriors preparing to battle. But how? No one should be left. Nick closed his eyes so that he could investigate the scene with his powers. Inside the once famed cathedral, screams from children rang out as his army pounded against the fortified door. Someone had piled the confessionals and pews against it to block his demons. No, not someone. Three women stood in the center of the nave, ready to defend a handful of children and a small group of mothers who cowered behind the altar. Unlike the terrified ones who cried and whimpered in helplessness, the three women took stock of their weapons. In his mind, he could see them clearly. Twin sisters he'd once called friends, Tabitha and Amanda, stood with another woman whose name he didn't know. She was familiar to him, but for some reason, he couldn't recall her. Not that it mattered. Armed with swords, knives, and a crossbow, the women appeared battle-worn and exhausted. Still, they stood as fierce warriors, ready to fight to the bitter end. Tabitha's hair was dyed black, while Amanda's remained their true dark auburn shade. As per her usual fashion, Tabitha was decked out in leather. Amanda's clothes were tight, yoga-styled, to allow her freedom of movement. The third woman wore gorilla gear, complete with a Kevlar vest and combat boots. Her chemically straightened, long black hair was pulled back from her face, and a deep bruise marred the dark skin of her left cheek. "We can't hold them," Tabitha whispered to the other two women so that the children wouldn't overhear her. Amanda lifted her chin in determination. "Then we die defending, just like our families did." The third woman nodded. "Acta est fabula." Tabitha and Amanda scowled at her. She checked the edge of her sword before she spoke again.
The play is over? Caesar's dying words?
Tabitha rolled her eyes.
I know what it means, woman. I was married to a Roman general, but dang, if you're gonna quote Caesar, at least use Veni, Vidi, Vici.
I came, I saw, I conquered? Amanda asked incredulously.
Really? Nice try, Tabby, but unfortunately the only butts getting kicked today are ours.
A loud strike echoed as the doors heaved under the latest blow. Tabitha growled,
They're coming through.
Amanda and Tabitha stood side by side while the third woman held her arms out. Fire engulfed her hands, letting him know that this woman wasn't human. She was a goddess. Not Mat, who he'd grown up with, but she reminded him of the Egyptian goddesses he'd met and killed over the centuries. If only he knew which one. Using her telekinesis, Amanda tried to hold the door, but all it did was give her a nosebleed as the demons broke through the wood and scattered the pews and confessionals in all directions. His army spilled into the building and headed straight for the children. Like ancient soldiers, the women charged them and fought with an unparalleled skill. Tabitha took out three demons with one swing of her sword, while Amanda and the other woman killed even more. For a few minutes, they appeared to be winning. But they were no match for the sheer number of his forces, as his demons overran them. Amanda went down first, and then Tabitha, as she ran to help her sister. With them out of the way, his army turned to the last woman and swarmed her. She held them back with firebolts for 2 minutes longer. But in the end, she too fell to the greater number. The children and women ran for the back, not that it did them any good. In unison, his army tore after them.
Bon appetit, Nick whispered.
He started to turn away until one demon caught his attention and held it there. Unlike the others, this one didn't battle or pursue the humans. Dressed in black armor that appeared to ooze blood even though he wasn't wounded, this demon was more fierce than all of the others. Malphus surveyed the women's bodies with a look of utter disgust and sorrow. Until he realized Tabitha was still alive. He knelt by her side and cradled her head tenderly.
Tabby, I'm so sorry.
Grimacing, she opened her eyes as she labored to breathe. She laughed bitterly, exposing a set of bleeding teeth.
There are some things that sorry doesn't fix, Caleb. Shh, don't speak. You failed us,
she breathed, cutting Malphus off before he could continue. She licked her bruised lips, then went limp in his arms. Her eyes turned dull. Tabitha Lane Devereaux Magnus was dead. Wincing, Caleb held her close to his heart and stroked her bloody hair.
No, Tabby, I failed myself.
He glanced to the other two women as tears filled his demonic eyes.
Most of all, I failed Nick.
Those words tore through Nick like a shredder. How dare his servant pity him? He was not some paltry human to be patronized as if he were nothing. He was the Malachi, lord and ruler of all the known universes. His vision darkening with the weight of his fury, he manifested himself inside the cathedral, right beside Malphus. His gold armor gleaming in the dim light, Nick lifted his black wings as he towered over his servant.
You never did learn the proper tone or stance.
He grabbed Malphus by his throat and lifted him away from Tabitha's body.
Go ahead, Caleb dared him. Kill me. My only wish is that you'd done it centuries ago before I was forced to serve what you've become.
Fine, then.
I'm finished with you anyway.
Nick growled in his face. He snapped Malphus's neck, then threw him against the wall so hard that his body went through the stone and landed in the alley outside. Snarling in fury, Nick turned to go after those who'd fled, but as he took a step, his gaze went to Tabitha's arm. Blood stained her skin, yet that wasn't what had grabbed his attention. Rather, it was the Latin words tattooed on her forearm.
Fabra est sui caque fati.
She creates her own destiny. For the first time in years, Nick felt something other than fury and hatred. It had been so long since he'd last had this emotion that it took him a full minute to name it. Remorse. It ripped through him over what he'd done to the people he'd once called family, to the very people he'd loved and protected. Kyrian Hunter had saved him and his mother, and how had he repaid him? He'd taken everything Kyrian had loved and destroyed it, and then he'd taken his life. How did I become this monster? There was no one left to blame for his transformation. After all his promises that he wouldn't, that nothing could make him, he had given in. Nick looked down at his blood-soaked armor and clawed hands that had long ago ceased being human. He moved his gaze around the sacred room where he had marked all the major milestones of his human life and saw what remained of it. Only twisted, burning wreckage surrounded him, inside and out. When had he lost himself so fully? Throwing his head back, Nick roared in agony. Ambrose sat up in bed, shaking from the premonition that had crept into his sleep. Again. Tears filled his eyes as he saw in his mind the image of Tabitha and Amanda dead on the same floor where he had attended countless masses with his mother, where he'd once walked as an altar boy and had sworn repeatedly that he would never become the monster his father was. Instead, he'd morphed into something much worse. How could I ever do such a thing? How could he ever allow himself to deteriorate into such a beast? Grinding his teeth, he wanted to purge the images out of his head, but they were there, aching, taunting, real. It was the future he saw, and he couldn't let it happen. No matter what it took, he had to save them all. He had to.
Nicholas?
He flinched as Artemis sat up beside him and touched his bare shoulder. Worry furrowed her beautiful brow as her red hair fell around her slender shoulders in perfect curls.
You're trembling.
Ambrose shook his head in denial. I never tremble, nothing scares me. She didn't believe it. He saw the truth in her green eyes as she brushed his damp hair back from his face.
Is it your dream again?
It's not a dream, Artie, it's a vision. Acheron was right, we can't change our fate. Only how we bring it about.
Is that really what you believe?
Ambrose raked his hand through his sweat-soaked hair. No, I can't. He locked gazes with her, then spoke more forcefully. I won't. In that moment, he felt his powers rising, trying to drown out his humanity and turn him into the creature he was born to be. But he wasn't lost. Not yet.
No one controls me, he growled in his demon's voice, pushing that darkness into submission. Ever. I will not become the Malachi.
He got out of bed and quickly dressed.
Where are you going?
He hesitated, then answered with more conviction than he'd ever had before.
To alter my past so that I can change my future.
Chapter 1. When most guys said that their girlfriend was going to kill them, it was a gross exaggeration or extreme paranoia. In the case of Nicholas Gaucher, it was a harsh, brutal fact. One so solid he could chisel a check on it, especially since the warning that his girl was an assassin sent to murder him had come from Death himself. The one creature who would know a killer best. As the old saying went, he couldn't argue with Death. Stunned and numb from that unexpected landmine, Nick turned his attention to Nakota Kennedy as she sat down in their chemistry class beside Nick's best friend, Caleb Malthus. For once, her tight cream sweater didn't turn his mind to mush, nor did the bright smile on her lips. Lips that held his attention and momentarily distracted his thoughts. Yeah, okay, she really was seriously hot, from the top of her soft, shiny brown hair to the tips of her pink leather boots. And don't get him started on her green, green eyes that held an indelible fire so bright it was scorching. But a man had to have some standards, and not being murdered by his girl was definitely one of them.
teenage hormones be defied. So then why did it feel like someone had kicked his tenders when her smile faded and sadness replaced the joy on her face? Why did it hurt him to see the uncertainty he caused her? I am so messed up. That was the only reasonable explanation. No normal, sane person would care whether or not he hurt the feelings of a woman sent to kill him. Except for Nick, moron, non-normal, Gaucher. Nick dropped his gaze to the pink heart necklace she wore that he'd given her to celebrate their anniversary and their escape from another near-death adventure. It had been a token of how much he loved her, and to let her know that her life meant a lot more to him than his own, that he would gladly die to protect her. And yet, she'd known the whole time that her mission here at St. Richard's was to end his life. Ain't this the crap heap? I swear my undying loyalty, and she swears to take my head. Why was he even surprised? Because in spite of the fact that he was half-demon, he wanted to believe in the goodness of others, that deep down people were decent, even non-people people. And as her gaze held his, he no longer saw his chemistry classroom or any of his classmates. Everything faded from his sight except Nakoda. She looked so sweet and innocent, just like any beautiful teenage girl. No one would ever guess she was anything except normal. Same with Caleb. With his dark hair and eyes and perfect build and features, Caleb was the quintessential Mr. All-American rich kid. He bore no resemblance to the winged demon Nick knew him to be. For that matter, Nick looked normal on the outside, too. Well, except for the hideously foul Hawaiian shirt his mother had guilted him into donning. The only bright side to wearing it was that it had been known to blind a few enemies sent to end his existence, or crack them up so badly that he was able to get in a cheap shot before they killed him. And it served as a great female demon repellent. Human, too, for that matter. But Nick was anything but normal. I know what I am. That wasn't the question. He, like Caleb, was demon kin, born and bred. Nakoda's species was the one up for grabs. Who are you? No. What are you? He'd asked her that question repeatedly, and every time she'd refused to answer. And now he knew why. Which meant she could be human, god, demon, soul sucker, shapeshifter, fringe guard. There were so many creatures he'd learned about over the last year that he couldn't even begin to guess her origins. For all he knew, she was some heart-eating ice cannibal. That at least explained the cold, bitter ache in the center of his chest. Are you planning to take your seat any time in the near future, Mr. Gaucher, or should I start class while you gape blankly in the center of the room? His classmates laughed. Nick turned to glare at Grimm over his shoulder. The famed Reaper stood before the whiteboard, where he'd written the name Mr. Graves. Yeah, you are whacked, Grimm. Totally. But only Nick saw Grimm's true form, that of a handsome blonde man in his mid-20s. Heck, he even saw Grimm's sigh that was secured with a strap across the creature's back. To the rest of the room's occupants, including Nakoda and Caleb, Grimm appeared as an average, chubby, middle-aged man in a cheap brown suit. Yeah. Nick would laugh, but Grimm might take that as a personal challenge and decide to help Cody kill him. Yet what Nick couldn't get over was Grimm's presence in this room. It was a sad day when Death had nothing better to do than pretend to be a substitute chemistry teacher. No, it wasn't that simple. Someone in this room was going to die soon, and Grimm was here to toy with his victim. Nick could feel it with every inhuman part of himself. But who? Knowing he wouldn't have an answer today, he smirked at Grimm, which probably wasn't the brightest idea. But far be it from him to ever let his common sense stop his stupidity. By all means, commence, Mr. Graves. The last thing I'd ever want to do is keep you from your business. Death gave him a lopsided grin. Wise boy. Knew you could be taught. Nick didn't miss the sinister undertone and reference to the fact that Grimm had been his tutor over this last year. The Spectre had taught him a lot of interesting things, but those powers had a bad habit, through no fault of Nick's, of backfiring. Because of that, Grimm thought him to be dense and stupid. But he was neither. He caught on quick and saw things other people missed.
including the fact that Grimm had his own agenda where Nick was concerned. He definitely wasn't tutoring Nick out of the goodness of his black heart. Nick had yet to uncover the truth of Grimm's motivation, but in time, he would. Still, this latest information about Nakoda rattled him. Did he dare believe it? Especially since he knew what a troublemaker Grimm was. For all he knew, Grimm could easily be lying just to stir it up.
Trust her over death.
She'd fought by his side countless times and saved his life, and yet he heard Ambrose's voice in his head, warning him that he had yet to experience the betrayals that would one day kill him. And his mother. Sick to his stomach with that thought, Nick sat down between Nakoda and Caleb. Nakoda reached out to touch his hand.
Are you all right?
Nick slid his hand out from under hers.
Yeah, sure, why wouldn't I be?
He pulled his backpack open so that he could grab the books he needed for class, but paused as he saw her frowning from the corner of his eye.
Are you really going to launch at my throat one day, Cody? After we've been through so much?
That was the question he wanted to ask her. But there was no need to get into this while they were in class. His school rep was already so low, he'd have to use a tractor full of dynamite just to blast it up to gutter level. The last thing he needed was to publicly accuse his girlfriend of being some evil demon sent to end his life.
Bad enough they think I'm a criminal and trash. No need to make them think I'm crazy, too.
He opened his book and tried to focus on words that had lost all meaning.
You should just drop out and forget this crap.
Not like school taught him anything he needed in real life. It definitely didn't teach him how to survive the predators who kept coming after him, how to avoid all the preternatural traps waiting. Nick clenched his fist as an overwhelming urge to go tell his principal where to shove this useless curriculum went through him.
I can't do that.
It would break his mother's heart, and he'd be labeled a real loser by everyone else, even himself. If Caleb could suffer through all the indignities, hassles, and boredom of high school with only an hourly complaint or two, he could too. And unlike Caleb, he hadn't lived through the history lessons that were being taught. To Nick, most of this was new.
What's going on, Nick? Why are you suddenly mad at me?
He glanced over to Nakoda, who'd pushed her thoughts into his mind. He started not to respond, but she was the only one who could hear his telepathy.
Who are you, Cody?
This time it wasn't a question. He demanded an answer. She glanced away.
You know I can't tell you.
Yes, you can. You won't. And that's the problem.
She sighed wearily.
Why are you on this again?
Because I learned the truth a few minutes ago. You're here to kill me.
Her features blanched, confirming Grimm's dire prediction where she was concerned. Anger tore through him so fast and furiously that he could taste it.
Are you not going to deny it?
She hesitated before she answered.
What do you want me to say?
I want the truth, Cody.
Tears filled her eyes as she looked away from him. For a moment, he felt like a heel for upsetting her. Then he felt stupid for that emotion. What kind of chump worried about upsetting someone who'd been sent to end his life?
Nick O'Shea. Moron. Fool. Bad dresser. Major loser dork.
Cody touched his hand again.
The only truth that should concern you is that I care for you. Deeply.
Deeply, yeah, right. What kind of hackneyed crap was that? It ranked right up there with, he has a great personality, or better yet, why don't we just be friends? Nick narrowed his gaze on her, trying to see the truth of her emotions. Did she really care about him? Or was she just that good an actress?
You are here to kill me. Yes or no?
She pulled her hand back.
It's not that simple.
He gaped at her. Was she serious? What could be simpler than that? Every head in class turned to look at him. Nick felt his entire face heat up. Oh yeah, like puberty wasn't embarrassing enough. Now he had to shout out in the middle of class for no apparent reason.
Channeling spirits again, Gaucher?
Stone Blakemore, head jock moron, asked.
Nah, Stone's best friend, Mason, said. It's probably some mental disorder, like backwoods Tourette's.
The entire room erupted into laughter.
Embarrassed and ticked off, Nick glared at the aptly named Stone, who was about as intelligent as the average rock. Not to insult rocks.
Grim arched a brow.
Are you in the midst of some personal problem? Should I write you a pass for the counselor?
Nick had to bite back the urge to insult his mentor, but only a fool taunted Death. And the one thing Nick had learned over the last year was that Death didn't have a sense of humor, and especially not when he was the brunt of the joke.
No, it was a momentary jaw spasm.
Then I suggest you try to control your bodily functions in the future.
Death turned back to the board. Nick ground his teeth. This wasn't the time and place for this, and he knew it. He'd never been big into drama anyway.
Let's talk about this later.
Cody stiffened.
Fine. I don't want to talk about it at all.
Of course she didn't. Leave it to him to find the only woman in the universe who didn't want to talk about her feelings or their relationship, the only one who wanted to keep things status quo and undiscussed.
You all right?
Sighing, Nick nodded at Caleb. If they didn't stop silently talking to him, he was going to look seriously mental soon. Worse, Caleb leaned forward and glanced meaningfully to Cody. Great. Now the two of them were talking to each other and he couldn't hear it. Nick raked his hand through his hair as his anger mounted. It was so fierce it made his ears hum. Over the last few weeks, he'd noticed his quick draw temper getting worse. But then, he'd always had anger management issues, way too quick to ignite and even harder to calm. It was why he tried to be easygoing and to let things slide, why he tried not to care about much of anything. Yet lately, every little thing annoyed him. Was this the demon in him gaining power? His future self, Ambrose, had warned him repeatedly about allowing his temper to rule him. Normally, it was Cody who calmed him down when he got into these moods. Yeah, not today. Today, the mere mention of her name ignited his fury. He felt on edge and closer to losing it than he ever had before. Except for those times when he had actually lost it.
Come on, class, end already. I definitely need a timeout.
Why couldn't he have the power of time manipulation? According to Ambrose, that was the only power he'd never possess. Not unless he stole it from others. Of course, he did have the power of suggestive persuasion. That one actually worked most of the time. But not with Death.
Dang you for teaching this class.
It felt like torture, and not the usual my class is too long torture he was used to.
Am I boring you, Gaucher?
Nick blinked as he realized Grimm was talking to him. He chose to ignore the snickers and snide comments from the peanut gallery who were so easily amused, as most mindless creatures were, by his lack of attention.
Excuse me? We're going over the periodic table. I've asked you 4 times now, what is RU and what's its element category and atomic weight?
Like he knew that. Who in their right? His thought trailed off as the answer popped into his head.
Ruthenium, it's a rare transition metal. The atomic number is 44 and its weight is 101.07. It has a melting point of 2,334 degrees Celsius and 4,233 degrees Fahrenheit and a boiling point of 7,502 degrees Fahrenheit. Anything else you want to know about it?
Wait, did he understand any of that?
Yeah, weirdly, he did.
But how? Was this another power that would come and go, and that would never work properly?
Grimm nodded with a grudging light of respect in his eyes.
So you can learn by osmosis.
That was one theory, because he had no other way to explain how he knew something he couldn't remember ever seeing. It had to have seeped into his skin while he slept on top of his chem book. That made sense to him.
Apparently.
I always knew you were a freak, Gaucher. Stone muttered.
Nick's temper exploded.
And so did Stone. One second he was mocking Nick, and the next, his shirt caught fire. Nick jumped up with Caleb and half the class. Some of the girls screamed and ran for the door, while Grimm stood back with an evil gleam of hope in his dead eyes.
Brynna Adams grabbed the fire extinguisher from the wall and tried to work it. Nick ran to her and held his hand out for her to surrender the red canister.
Given the propensity of their old stove to spontaneously burst into flames whenever they used it, Nick had a ton of experience using these. Brynna surrendered it without question. Nick quickly moved to Stone and doused him with a giant burst. White smoke filled the room, and it wasn't until after the fire went out that it dawned on Nick how wrong he'd been in the past.
Guess I would put you out if you were on fire, Stone.
Who knew?
He was a bigger humanitarian than he'd ever thought.
Then again, given Stone's typical behavior, he wasn't really doing anyone a favor by saving the jerk. He should have let Grimm have him. Nick held the fire extinguisher in his arms as several students cheered. Stone was soaking wet and covered with goo. For once, he looked at Nick with something other than disdain. If Nick didn't know better, he might even think that it was gratitude.
Are you okay, baby?
Casey shrugged Stone's Letterman jacket off and wrapped it around Stone's shoulders. She wiped the residue on Stone's face.
Speak to me.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Sobbing, Casey threw herself against Stone. Grimm took it all in stride.
Guess you'll be needing a pass to the nurse's office?
Could he sound any more disappointed? But then death didn't really blend with normal people, and most likely he'd been hoping for another body to claim. Mason clapped Nick hard on the shoulder.
Quick thinking, Gaucher. Didn't know you had an actual brain in you.
The urge to turn the fire extinguisher on Mason was so strong that he wasn't sure how he kept from doing it. Brynna stepped forward and touched Nick's hand.
You better let me have it before you give in.
Nick scowled.
Huh?
She smiled up at him. I know that look, Nick. I figure you're only seconds away from dousing Mason or using it to bash him in the head. Nick let her take the canister from him.
Some people would consider that a public service.
But not our principal. Unfortunately, she was right. Mr. Head would have a conniption, and then Nick would have detention, and that was something he wanted to stay out of for a while. Stone and Casey left the room and headed toward the office. Grimm cleared his throat to get everyone's attention.
Now that the drama is over and, sadly, no one died, we should get back to work.
As Nick returned to his seat, he caught the apprehensive glance that Nakoda traded with Caleb.
What?
He asked her as he sat down.
Did you do that?
She whispered.
Do what?
Set Stone on fire?
Scoffing, Nick started to deny it, but the minute he opened his mouth to speak, he realized something. 2 seconds before Stone had burst into flames, Nick had wished it on him.
Crap.
Chapter 2.
I set someone on fire.
Nick couldn't let that one thought go. It was horrifying to think that he could cause something so deadly with nothing more than a single random thought.
My powers are growing,
but not his ability to control them. If anything, that was getting worse, and they were exploding all over the place without any warning or reason whatsoever.
Power without control is worthless. Asheron's favorite saying.
At least it was Ash's pet phrase anytime Nick got behind the wheel and laid into the accelerator.
Damn it, Nick. You've got to learn to go slow and not rush off into traffic at warp 10, especially not when it's heading straight for you.
Asheron's other fave rant where he was concerned. In the past, Nick had ignored those warnings. Now, the image of Stone bursting into flames was seared in his mind. Of course, the burnt smell of Stone's werewolf hair hadn't really dissipated from the room. It clung to the air with a brutal reminder of what Nick had unconsciously done. 1 nanosecond of lapsed judgment, and he'd almost killed someone. Granted, Stone was a jerk, but he didn't deserve to die for it. At least, not today. Nick would have to ride herd on himself after this, lest he do some real damage to someone. Suddenly the bell rang, startling him from his thoughts. Nick actually jumped around a foot in his seat at the unexpected sound. Talk about looking stupid. Just what he wanted, another reason to look awkward in front of his peers. Caleb arched a brow at him.
You all right? You didn't see another shadow, did you?
Nakoda asked in a hushed tone, a question he well understood, since the last shadow he'd seen had been a demon that one of his classmates had unleashed to wreak havoc with all their lives. Havoc, he was still neck deep in.
While he'd been cleared of all the false charges Dina had made against him, rumors about the whole god-awful situation that had led to his being handcuffed and hauled off school property abounded, and they clung to him with the tenacity of Velcro. That thought didn't help his mood at all. Nick narrowed his gaze on the necklace he'd given her. "The only demon I see right now is you, Cody." She stiffened. "That's not fair. Neither is pretending to be my girlfriend while you're sizing me up for a body bag." He jammed his book into his backpack, then turned to glare at Caleb. "Did you know about that?"
"I still don't know what you're talking about."
"I'm talking about the fact that Cody's an assassin sent in to kill me." Caleb went full on into protection mode, letting Nick know that Caleb had been as clueless about her true intentions as him. At least Caleb isn't in on it. That made him feel a little better.
He put himself between Nick and Cody. "Is that true?" he growled.
Cody glanced around to make sure no one was listening to them before she answered. "It's not that simple, Malphus. I was sent to stop him from becoming what he's supposed to be."
Caleb scoffed. "Yeah, Nick. That sounds like killing orders to me."
Cody tried to step around him, but Caleb refused to let her pass.
"We're enemies, Nakota. My job is to protect him from all threats, and now that clearly means you."
"You can't be serious." She looked past Caleb's massive shoulder. "Nick, is this really what you want?"
"No. What I wanted was a normal girlfriend who only talks about shopping and fashion and crap I don't care about. I have enough enemies moving in at my back. Last thing I need to do is put someone there I know intends to take a shot at me sooner or later."
He jerked his backpack up and slung it over his shoulder.
"We're done."
Nick turned and started for the door.
"You can't do this."
The sound of tears in her voice made his gut twist into a knot.
"Nick."
"Don't turn around." He'd forgive her if he did. One look at the tears in her eyes, and he'd be an idiot for her. He knew it.
He couldn't stand to see any woman in pain, and he'd do anything to make one smile. But not giving into that urge was the hardest thing he'd ever done, because the truth was, he loved her. He really did.
"Love will make you stupid, kid, trust me. You won't listen to anyone, not even your own common sense."
That was the pet tirade of his boss, Kyrian, one he'd drilled into Nick's head.
"Be careful who you give your heart to, Nick. Make sure that you hold hers before your hand over yours. Do not make my mistake."
Kyrian Hunter was now an immortal protector because his wife had betrayed him in ancient Greece and surrendered him to his enemies to be brutally tortured and killed. The horror of her actions had scarred Kyrian so badly that he'd sold his soul to the Greek goddess Artemis so that he could take revenge on those enemies. In exchange for his act of vengeance, Kyrian had become a Dark Hunter. Legendary soldiers, the Dark Hunters fought to keep mankind safe from all the supernatural predators who wanted to put humans on their menus. It was an eternal life, with a lot of perks. Even so, Kyrian would have much rather stayed human and died poor than have the wife he'd treasured beyond all things betray him. Love and loyalty above all. That was the one pledge that Nick subscribed to. Treachery was for cowards who didn't have the courage to fight face on, and while Nick O'Shea might be a lot of things, he had never been, nor would he ever be, a coward. No, sir. If he was gunning for you, he let you know it in no way to be misconstrued words and actions. And still, his heart ached at the loss of Cody's friendship, at the loss of what could have been between them. "I am an idiot. Why else would he hurt this badly for a woman who'd planned to kill him?" When he stopped at his locker, Caleb clapped a hand on his shoulder.
"Cheer up, bud. I know it feels like you just had your stones handed to you, but you will survive it."
Nick opened the door, not sure if he wanted to survive.
"Have you ever had a woman betray you?"
"In ways you're too young to know about, Nick. Believe me, on the grand scheme of pain, this isn't so bad."
"Funny it didn't feel that way."
Nick clenched his teeth as agony spread through him. He just wanted to go home, curl up in bed, and pretend this day hadn't happened.
"Is that how you ended up enslaved to my father?"
"No.
Nick swapped out his books. You're never gonna tell me how he got a hold of your leash, are you?
Nope.
Why?
Because one day you will grow up and become a full-fledged Malachi. Your father will die, hopefully soon, and then I'll be free. But if I trust you with that information, then you'll know how to collar me. No offense, but I don't trust the demon in you not to turn on me and find me after I'm gone, and I've spent enough time as a slave. I don't want to live one day longer as one than I have to.
Nick was even more offended.
I'd die before I did that to you. You have to know me better.
That's your human heart speaking, and I respect that. But I also know that sooner or later, that heart will be devoured by the darkness inside you. Then we won't be friends. I'll be a tool, and you won't hesitate to throw me in a box and use me.
Caleb sounded like Cody now, and truthfully, Nick was sick of it.
If you really believe I'm beyond hope, why are you here?
Because my master ordered it.
And if my father was dead?
Caleb looked away. Emotions Nick couldn't name flitted across his features. It looked like Caleb was debating with himself.
Well?
Nick prompted him for an answer. Caleb sighed.
The only thing I know for certain is that if your dad was dead, I definitely wouldn't be in high school with you right now. I'd still be in bed, asleep.
Nick laughed. He couldn't blame Caleb for that. He wouldn't be here either if he could find another way out. But that wasn't what concerned him.
Would you still be on my speed dial?
Caleb narrowed those dark eyes on him.
I really want to hate you, Gaucher.
Nick grinned.
Yeah, I'm like Kudzu. I look all nice and harmless, and the next thing you know, I've taken root and it's too late. You like me.
His smile faded as he saw Cody in the hallway coming toward them. It slammed into him like a fist.
So how long does it usually take to get over a broken heart?
Caleb glanced in Cody's direction before he answered.
You don't even want to know. My best advice?
He jerked his chin to the opposite end of the hallway.
Distraction.
Scowling, Nick wasn't sure what he meant until Casey Woods threw herself against him so hard that he stumbled back and hit the lockers behind him with a resounding crash. He would complain, but having his arms full of the most popular cheerleader in school squelched any desire to be negative about how this miracle had come into being. She looked up at him and smiled.
You're my hero, Nick.
She kissed him. Stunned past any kind of rational thought, he didn't move. He couldn't. It wasn't every day the captain of the cheerleaders shoved him into the wall against school policy and lip-locked him. Even more shocking was the sensation of her long, dark ponytail brushing against the bare skin on his arm. After a second, she pulled back and gave him a hot look that melted him on the spot.
Call me later, Kay?
He tried to speak, but nothing would come out. Instead, he stood there like some gulping catfish with his mouth opening and closing and making no sound whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm so slick, teen models call me for dating advice.
Luckily, Casey didn't wait around for his brain to kick in and have him say something really stupid. She skipped back into the crowd after one of her friends. Still stunned, Nick pushed himself off the locker bank.
I'm so glad I'm not you.
He blinked at Brenna's dire tone as she opened her locker beside him.
I didn't do anything.
Yeah, but I caught the look on Cody's face when she saw Casey molesting you, then reversed course and headed the other way.
Ooh, Nick, it wasn't pretty. Cody gonna have her some deep-fried Cajun Mountain oysters for dinner. Probably breakfast, too.
Nick let out a tired breath as his pain returned with friends.
No, she won't. We broke up.
Since when?
10 minutes ago,
Caleb answered for him.
No,
Brenna gasped.
Say it ain't so, Nick. You two were perfect together.
This wasn't helping his mental state. What next? Would some sappy breakup song start playing over the intercom to torture him?
Not perfect enough.
Brenna growled low in her throat.
What did you do?
Her question offended him. It wasn't me. Why does it always have to be the guy's fault?
'Cause it usually is.
Well, that was insulting. Thanks a lot, Brenna. And for the record, I'm the victim.
Then I'm sorry.
Nick inclined his head to her, grateful that she'd at least tried to sound sincere.
I appreciate it.
Rubbing his arm, she offered him a sympathetic smile.
For the record, I hope you two get back together.
For the record, we won't.
She shook her head sadly and closed her locker door.
Well, if you need a friend, you have my number. I haven't forgotten what you did for me when I needed someone. You really are a great guy, Nick.
Thanks.
Anytime.
Brenna headed off to class.
Nick turned away and walked toward his next period. Thankfully, it was with Caleb and not Cody. Caleb picked up his pace to walk beside him.
You do know Brenna was hitting on you just now.
Yeah, right. Caleb was shy a few bricks on his wall, if he really believed that.
No, she wasn't. She thinks of me like a brother.
You sure?
Positive. I tried to hold her hand once when I first started going here, and she read me the riot act for it. I got the full, we are just friends, so don't make me call my older brother out on you to beat you to a pulp speech from her years ago.
Caleb laughed.
And that's why I only hook up with women who have sisters, or even better, no siblings at all.
Got your butt whipped once, huh?
No.
Caleb sobered.
But I know what I'd do for my sister if some idiot broke her heart.
That news floored him. Caleb never really talked about his family, and he'd never before made any kind of declaration of love toward them.
You have a sister?
Not full-blooded, but yeah, I have a number of them.
Are they around?
Caleb shook his head.
Even though I'd kill for them if they needed me to, we're not that close.
He opened the classroom door for Nick to enter first.
I'm sorry.
Don't be.
I'm not.
I don't like personal entanglements or obligations. Gets you into too much trouble. But blood is blood. End of the day, if one of them needed me, I'd be stupid for them.
And that was why, even though Caleb was a demon, Nick respected him and called him friend. Caleb spent a lot of time denying his better nature, but Nick had seen it up close and personal enough to know that Caleb was cold-blooded, decent. No matter how much the demon protested, you could always count on him in a fight. Taking his seat, Nick pulled his book out and opened it to the day's assignment. Still, he couldn't get Cody out of his mind. Now that they were officially broken up, she would be coming for him for sure. The only question was, when?
Bellum?
Nakota looked up at the whisper of her real name that no one in the human realm used anymore. In the far corner stood the shimmering image of her guide, Srausha. Only she could see him, and he was definitely summoning her. Could this day get any better, really? Why couldn't Nick have set her on fire and ended her misery? Sighing, she got up and walked to Mr. Rainey's desk.
Mr. Rainey, may I please have a pass to the restroom?
You know we don't, she lowered her voice and chose the one topic her male math teacher wouldn't argue with.
Sorry, but it's that time of the month and—
Enough, he snapped, reaching for the pad of passes on his desk. I don't want to hear about anything that personal. He quickly scribbled in the form, then tore the sheet off. Don't be long, Miss Kennedy.
Thank you.
Taking the pass, she ducked out of the room and headed for the bathroom. She would vanish immediately, but didn't want to take a chance on being caught by one of the school's hidden cameras. Though she knew where most were located, she wasn't sure about all of them, and her powers didn't play well with electronics. Better safe than sorry. She went into the bathroom and entered the first stall, then locked the door and flashed herself to Srosha's less-than-friendly office. Dark and dismal, it was a sad study in grays and browns, not appealing in the least, but he seemed to like it that way. Unlike his office, Srosha was a thing of absolute beauty as he stood waiting next to the floor-to-ceiling windows that looked out onto nothing. Literally, it was absolutely dark, like they were lost in space. The only light came from the edges of a dim amber-colored tray overhead. Tall, lithe, and extremely graceful, Srosha was so beautiful, it was hard to look straight at him. His long blonde hair flowed around a body that was pure perfection. Every feature appeared to be carved with extreme precision to render him angelic and breathtaking, and for once, He allowed her to see his eyes. They were an eerie, iridescent green. Dressed in ancient battle armor, he commanded attention and respect, even from her.
You summoned me?
Srausha blinked slowly before he answered.
It is time.
Those were the three words she'd been dreading most. Her final order.
We can't kill him. Not yet.
Srausha arched a commanding brow that questioned her sanity for daring to contradict him.
What is your excuse today?
The senior Malachi still lives. If I kill Nick, Adarian will have no weakness whatsoever and no reason to hold back, since nothing other than Nick can weaken him. And we both know I can't defeat Adarian on my own.
She had the scars to prove it.
So unless you're harboring a weapon I know nothing about, or are willing to give me a hand in the fight, we have no choice except to wait for Nick to fulfill his destiny and kill his father.
And then he will have his father's strength and powers in addition to the ones he already has. You think you can defeat him then?
No. She'd be even more ineffectual against him than she'd been against his predecessors. But death wasn't her only option.
He's not beyond redemption.
Unlike his father and the others, Nick had a heart that felt and understood real love. Personal sacrifice, loyalty. No Malachi before had even known those terms existed. Srausha sneered.
You're letting your feelings blind you just as you did before.
It was true. She'd had a perfect chance to slaughter Adarian when he'd first escaped the Nether Realm. And rather than take the shot, she'd felt too sorry for him to kill him. Even now, she could see his wretched state. His master, Noir, had tortured him well. Weak and battered, Adarian had barely been able to stand on his own, and she'd refused to kill in cold blood. Like the warrior her father had trained her to be, she'd given him the chance to recover before they battled. Her vital mistake. Had she taken him out when he'd emerged, her brothers would still be here, alive and whole, and she would be at home with her family in her own time period, not stuck in this purgatory.
I've learned well, and I won't make that mistake again.
Srausha scoffed.
No? From where I stand, that's exactly what you're doing. You think I can't feel the love you hold for a demon?
He spat that last word at her. Ashamed, Nakoda looked away.
I have not forgotten my duties.
How could she? She'd forsaken her real given name and taken on her sacred title so that she would never again be tempted by her emotions. Nakodas were marked servants who had no family ties to distract them. They lived for no purpose other than to serve the higher order and keep the balance of power intact. Unlike the Thonians, who had the ability to kill gods and were charged with overseeing them, Nakodas weren't born to their positions. They were chosen. And unlike the Thonians, they had very strict rules they had to follow and beings they had to answer to. She wasn't allowed to second-guess her guide, and yet Srausha was wrong about Nick. She could feel it with every part of herself. Nick wasn't their enemy. Not yet, anyway. Srausha stepped forward to tower over her, an act of supreme intimidation that might have worked on her had she been human or born of lesser stock.
Are you refusing to kill him, Bellum?
She faced him without flinching or cowering. I'm refusing to unleash the senior Malachi onto this world, especially when we don't know if he'll ever father another child. Nick is the only one who can weaken him, and the only other being capable of killing Adarian at full strength is imprisoned in a place we can't free him from. Not without starting a whole nother fire that neither of us is ready to ignite. Srausha sucked his breath in sharply between his teeth. The expression on his face said that he was barely 1 second away from striking her.
Fine, then. Get him to his father, then kill them both. Those are your orders.
Gah. He made it sound so simple.
But no buts,
Srausha snarled.
I am well aware that you no longer hold sway over the younger's emotions. Someone else is manipulating him.
We can only assume that they work for the Atramentaceous Order, and before they take complete control of their weapon, we must destroy it.
Those words set her fury on fire.
Nick is a boy. He's not an it.
Sroosha cocked a disbelieving brow.
Is that insubordination, I hear?
No, sir.
It was indignation and extreme aggravation that he was being so obtuse about this. She'd been raised that you didn't slaughter the innocent on the chance that they might do something wrong.
It better not be. And you do well to remember your place, Nakota. I took you in when you had nothing and no one. Have you forgotten how I found you?
She swallowed the tears that rose up to choke her, as they always did whenever she looked at the past.
I have forgotten nothing.
Especially not the demon who had destroyed her entire family and left her alone in the universe. She'd vowed over her parents' graves that she would find the demon Malachi and destroy him before he had a chance to kill them. No matter what, she would stop him.
I will do my duty.
Then you better hurry before Nick grows any stronger.
Nakota lowered her head and pressed her fist to her heart in salute to her guide. But as she returned to the stall she'd left at St. Richard's, she couldn't stop the rush of emotions that tore her apart.
Sraosha was right.
She'd fallen for Nick in the worst sort of way, and now he wanted nothing to do with her. And judging by the look he'd given her earlier, he hated her passionately, and that hurt her a whole lot more than it should. Who could possibly have told him what she was? She hadn't breathed a word to a single soul. She had no real friends, no family left. No one should have known her true identity. Someone was working against her. If she could find out who, then perhaps she could spare Nick from his death sentence.
Don't be stupid. You know Sraosha is right.
Sooner or later, Nick would go Malachi. The demon in him would devour every part of the human heart she treasured and leave him nothing but a killing machine who had no mercy or compassion for anyone. He would become the monster they'd written legends about. Reaching up, she touched the heart necklace he'd given her. He was such a kind, giving soul, respectful, gentle, things his father had never been. Our births and bloodlines don't define us. The paths we choose to follow do. None of us have to be what we're born to be. We have more courage and power inside us than we know. Trust in yourself, kitten, and stay true to your own convictions, no matter what others say or do. They don't matter anyway. People will come and go from your life, but you will walk hand in hand with yourself forever. Whatever you do, don't choose to be something you hate. I walked that path for far too long, and it's an ugly place to live. I want you to be better, because I know for a fact that you are better than I ever was. Her father's words haunted her. He had defied his birth and his parents, as had her mother and uncle. Each had chosen to be much more than they'd been born for. They had shown her strength and courage, what it meant to swim upstream through the deadliest waters and hazards.
There will be one Malachi born unlike all the others. He will know love, and if you can keep him wrapped in it, grounded by it, he can be turned from the dark that spawned him. He will be the greatest champion this world has ever known. But should he lose anchor, he will turn into the one that destroys us all. For the very love that gives him goodness is the love that will turn him to pure hatred when he loses it.
I have to win him back,
she whispered. It was the only way. She couldn't risk Nick hating her. If she could keep hatred out of his heart, he would stay as he was. A hero. Unlike Sraosha, she didn't think that killing him would solve anything. Another Malachi would come forward to replace him, and if it was the one she suspected, it would be even worse. Currently, the next in line to replace Nick was a god in full right with full powers. No one would be able to stop a Malachi like that, ever. Not even the Thonians. But Sraosha wouldn't listen to her. He wanted Nick's heart with a lust she didn't understand. If anyone should want Nick dead, it was her. And part of her did. How could she not, given what all he'd taken from her? Over and over, she saw the demon Malachi, Nick's true form, killing her brothers. Her entire family had been slaughtered because of him. Without reservation or hesitation, she had come back in time so that she could stop his metamorphosis. This was her one and only chance to save everyone, even herself. I can't fail. She would either have to save Nick from his true nature or deliver his heart to Sraosha. Chapter 3.
Dang, boy, you drag that tail any lower, you won't be able to get across a parking lot.
Nick paused as he and Caleb entered the Triple B, the largest gun and computer store in the South, maybe even the world. The owner, Big Bubba Burdette, was one of Nick's best friends, and the closest thing to a father Nick had ever known. Standing over 6 feet tall, Bubba was well-muscled and humongous, something that came from his days as an award-winning football player who would have gone pro had he not decided to give up glory to stay home with the wife and son he loved more than anything else. A wife and son who had died tragically a decade back in a home invasion that had devastated Bubba and made him the kind of extreme survivalist they featured on doomsday documentaries and in gun magazines. Not to mention, he was a firm believer that a zombie apocalypse was imminent, hence the numerous zombie targets, undead paraphernalia, and the posters on the wall advertising his zombie survival classes he taught with his friend Mark. All over the store and shrunk down as small wallet-sized cards were tips on how to survive an attack. Nick's personal favorite was the poster right behind the register that listed the number one tip. Remember, you don't have to outrun the zombie, you just have to outrun your friends. That didn't exactly warm his heart and make him want to put Bubba at his back in a fight, but then again, Bubba didn't really subscribe to that. And Nick had fought the undead, including zombies, enough with Bubba to know that in a fight, you could count on him. And then some. Bubba left no man behind. And his real philosophy in a fight was shoot first, double tap the head, and then let God sort it out. And since this was the anniversary week of his family's deaths, Bubba's mama was in town, visiting with him. Because of that, his dark hair was cut short, and his beard had become a well-groomed goatee. He'd also dispensed with his ever-present zombie movie tees and red flannel shirts in favor of a black shirt with sleeves rolled up to his elbows. But his steel-toed combat boots were still his footwear of choice, mama or no mama. Nick would tease him for his maternal fear, but given the fact that he towered over his own mother, who kept him cowed and on a short leash, he had no room for mockery. He well understood the potent power of the mothership to quell even the fiercest opponent with nothing more than a glare and an arched brow. But the one thing about Bubba, aside from the fact the man was a total unpredictable lunatic, was that he constantly used southernisms even Nick had a hard time making out. Do what? Bubba locked the case where he'd been putting away inventory, then slid the key into his pocket. He stood up to face Nick and Caleb.
You're blue, son, practically glowing it like some mind sacrifice waiting to get your heart ripped out. What has you down so low?
Caleb leaned against the long glass counter and gave Nick a snide grin.
Your Mayan analogy is amazingly astute, Bubba. He broke up with his girl. Bubba tisked. Oh, now that's a dang shame. I really like Cody. She was cold-blooded decent.
Out of the corner of his eye, Nick saw Mark approaching him from the back room. With shaggy brown hair, he was about 2 inches shorter than Bubba and was only slightly less muscled. Thinking Bubba's partner in crime was going to console him, he didn't react until Mark zapped him in the butt with a cattle prod.
Hey!
Nick yelped as pain shot through him. What are you doing? Mark, who had not cleaned up his usual rumpled clothing couture because Bubba's mama was in town, held the cattle prod like he might use it again. Shocking some sense into you. Boy, are you out of your mind?
You don't let a girl like Cody go without a fight, at least not until she sets fire to everything you own. Then you kick her out, but not before then. He moved to shock Nick again. Nick jumped behind Caleb for protection. Would you stop that? No, I can't beat sense into you without going to jail for it. Mark closed the distance between them. Ain't no laws against shocking a minor. Nick continued to dance around Caleb, who was being derelict in his duty to keep the loon off him. Isn't that tortfeasory or something? I'm sure there's a law against it. Bubba let out a heavy sigh.
Unfortunately, Marky's right. It goes under the offensive touching laws.
Offensive touching laws? Mark drew up short to narrow his eyes at Bubba. How do you know that?
Don't want to go there. Not one of my finer moments. Suffice it to say, I don't want to pay any more lawyer fees for a while. I'm about tapped out on them.
Dear Lord, do I even want to know what y'all are getting into now?
Bubba's mama asked as she came through the black curtains that separated the back area from the front. Arms akimbo, she passed a menacing glare to Mark.
Do I need to call your daddy for more bail money, son?
Mark straightened up instantly before the much smaller lady. Dressed in a no-nonsense black Armani business suit and low heels, she seemed substantially taller than her tiny 5'1" stature. Mostly because you knew she wouldn't hesitate to take a stick to your backside if you needed it, no matter how big you thought you were in comparison to her. A world-famed pediatric surgeon, Bobby Jean Burdett took nothing from anyone, and that included lip from her only son and the best friend he'd grown up with. And the instant Nick saw her, he grinned a warm welcome. In his head, he heard her favorite saying about Bubba and her hair, which she currently had put up in a sophisticated bun. God gave me black, then Michael turned it gray, and L'Oreal made me a redhead. But the best part about Bubba's mama? She twice saved his life.
Hi, Dr. Burdett,
Nick said in a greeting, then he gestured at Mark. For the record, he was shocking me for no reason whatsoever. Storms brewed in her hazel eyes as she turned her gaze back to Mark.
Marcus Jethro Fingerman, you put that thing down. Right now. Good Lord, I barely got the boy patched up, and now you threatening to undo all my hard work on him. Don't do something else to harm him, or I'm going to turn his mama loose on you.
Mark immediately tossed the cattle prod so that it landed by Caleb's feet. He held his hands up as real fear entered his eyes.
Anything but Charisse. I swear I'd rather be naked in the swamp surrounded by Madog's super zombies and hungry gators than be covered in Kevlar, fully armed with a live grenade in my teeth and flamethrower in my hands and face Charisse Gauthier when she's in Nick protection mode. I ain't never seen a scarier chihuahua.
Mark was right. Forget his demon bodyguard. Nick's mom was 1,000 times more fierce and deadlier.
Besides, it ain't totally my fault, Dr. Burdett. Mark continued. I was just trying to make him see some sense.
Then for heaven's sakes, boy, try talking to him first. He's a bright child, you know. I'm sure he can see reason without electroshock treatments.
The look on Mark's face said he doubted it, but he didn't comment as he turned back to Nick.
So, what did you do to drive her off?
Nick grimaced as Mark repeated Brenna's earlier assumption.
Why does everyone think I'm to blame?
Dude, Mark said in a patronizing tone, do you own a mirror? Guys like you don't get women that fine.
Now that was just plain rude.
Excuse me?
Mark held his hands up again.
I ain't saying you're a bad-looking guy. Not that I look at you that way, but you got no fashion sense.
At all.
Nick flicked the edge of Mark's jacket.
This from Dr. Camo.
I ain't the one who broke up with the hot girlfriend. I never did figure out how you raided with her anyway, so yeah, it has to be your fault.
Nick was aghast.
You know, I am one of the most valuable players on my football team, right?
Mark snorted. So was I. And Bubba blew us all away in skill, so while that works in movies and TV shows, in real life, it ain't that big a thing. Really fine and decent women don't care what jersey you wear. And it definitely isn't what got a woman like Dakota talking to you to begin with. So my advice to you, kid? Piece of really nice jewelry and some expensive chocolates.
Dr. Burdett nodded.
I have to say he's right for most women. Shiny usually trumps stupid and reminds a girl why she liked you in the first place.
Yeah, but he didn't want his assassin back in his life, which he had to keep to himself.
Dr. Burdett could conceivably have him committed for rambling that kind of lunacy, even if it was the truth. So he went with the part of the story that would keep him out of a straitjacket. As a case of point, I'm the one who broke up with her. Mark looked at Caleb. Hand me that cattle prod back. This boy's so stupid, I gotta shock some brains into him. Caleb laughed. Don't tempt me. Ignoring them, Bubba tissed.
Hope you had a good reason, Nick. From what I seen, you two were golden together. And that don't come around often.
No, it didn't. And having lost the love of his life, Bubba knew that better than most. It wasn't stupid, Nick assured him. Mark sighed.
I still think we ought to hold him down and shock him till he gets over whatever's ailing him.
Dr. Burdett made a sound of deep aggravation in the back of her throat. Try it, Mark, and I will tell his mama on you.
Mark deflated instantly.
Yes, ma'am.
But the gleam in his eyes said that the minute Dr. Burdett left them alone, Mark was going for it.
Nick stepped forward so that his foot rested on the cattle prod. Better safe than sorry, especially whenever Mark was around.
So what are you two doing here this early anyway?
Bubba asked, changing the subject.
Don't you have football practice?
Nick let loose an evil laugh.
It ended early. Stone cracked the coach's wee belows with a badly thrown ball. I'm sure we'll all be running laps for hours tomorrow, but today, coach had to go ice himself.
Bubba and Mark sucked their breaths in sharply.
That'll ruin his weekend.
Yeah, and then some, Caleb added. Nick walked up to the counter and pointed to the ram chips that were locked in the case next to boxes of ammo.
Kieran wants to up his ram.
No problem. How much?
Max it out.
You got it.
Bubba pulled the ram out while Nick reached for his wallet and credit card.
Has it been at school?
Dr. Burdett asked as she went to lean against the counter not far from Nick.
Did they make